The following podcast is brought to you by Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in beautiful Burlington. Yes, it's golf season. And the course is open for play, and I, for one, can hardly wait. Just like last season, Crosswinds is taking every precaution to ensure that you have a safe and enjoyable round of golf. The views are spectacular. Rattlesnake Point over there. Mount Nemo over there. Just imagine yourself on the beautifully manicured fairways and greens, playing the game you love in a tranquil, natural setting overlooking the Niagara Escarpment. Crosswinds has a commitment to excellence that's apparent as soon as you drive through the gates. But don't take my word for it. Go to crosswindsgolf.com and book your tee time today. You're going to thank me later. And don't forget to tell them that Hebsy sent you. Now, let's start the podcast. Script. Why isn't it here? There we go. Hey, everybody, welcome live from Toronto. It's Hebsy on Sports, episode number 228. Boy, time flies, doesn't it? Mark Hebsher here and Toronto Mike over there. And Mike, do you want the bad news first or the other bad news first?
Oh, give me the bad news.
All right, we got all kinds of issues surrounding the Toronto Maple Leafs, actually, all the Toronto teams. The Leafs Matthew-less last night lost to Winnipeg, and now they don't know what's going to happen next. They're supposed to play tomorrow against Vancouver. They're supposed to play Monday against Vancouver in BC. But the Canucks are COVID-riddled, and we don't know what's going to happen. Their game tonight's been postponed, and everything else is up in the air as COVID once again raises its ugly head. Blue Jays, well, Teoscar Hernandez is the only guy with COVID problems right now. They got other issues, though. Injury riddled, but battling tooth and nail thanks to guys like Vladdy and Bo. Vladdy with a bomb last night that everybody was like, oh, my God, this is what we've been waiting for. We'll talk about that. All the Jays need now is some pitching. We've also got the wobbling Toronto Raptors. The wobbling Waptors. Unsure if they really want to make the playoffs or tank their way to a top draft pick. And if you're going to tank, do you want to make it look good or you just want to say, screw it, people know we're tanking anyway? Also, can we really compare Patrick Marleau with Gordie Howe? Are you ready for more changes in baseball, the rule changes? They're trying out a couple of wild ones. I'll tell you all about them. And what's going on in sports media these days? Is the Fan ready to make some changes in order to catch up to TSN 1050? Are they about to hire a program director? And who might that be? It's all coming up. First, let's say hi to Toronto Mike.
Hello, Hebsy Man. How you doing, buddy?
Are we close to getting the studio, the backyard studio ready?
You know, Cam Woolley was back there on Monday, so I'd say it's ready.
The great Cam Woolley.
On his way out the door, it was like an exit interview. He's retired from television. And yeah, he was back there. And we're ready for Hebsy Man back there.
Let's give Toronto Mike's podcast a plug. Cam Woolley, the latest to enter the Toronto Mike zone there. Actually, the first in how long?
Well, Mark Weisblatt was first because he was here last week. And then Cam second. So there's been two outdoor episodes in 2021.
And can you notice a difference between the outdoor episodes and the indoor episodes? Do you think the listener would know?
Yeah. Well, firstly, it's more fun. It's more fun in person. But I noticed audio-wise, what a difference when both parties are on the good mics without the internet involved at all. Right. Like, it just sounds so, like, you kind of hear it and you go, oh, yeah, that's how it was supposed to sound. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
Right. We welcome back our friends from Crosswinds Golf and Country Club. Just in time for the good weather. Amazing how that works out. They opened up like a month early because the weather was so spectacular a couple weeks ago, right? So golf season in full swing. The Masters has already happened. And twice in like 6 months, right? Two Masters.
And as you've mentioned, golf is hotter than ever because it's one of the few things people can do. Like, we're all locked down, but if you want to go golfing, that's fine.
It's the perfect sport for social distancing. Okay, sure. Mike, I'm worried. I'm worried that the Leafs won't make the playoffs.
Get out of here.
Because there might not be any playoffs. I mean, this is our one chance where we're segregated from all the American teams. We've got a chance. Even though they lost to Winnipeg last night. Oh, so they might not finish first. They might finish second. But they're going to get in the playoffs. But there might not be a playoffs. And if there is, it's going to be a bastardized version of a postseason run. Sorry, no Vancouver Canucks involved. Not that they're going to make it anyway, but they got problems. Forget about finishing a hockey season, staying healthy. being alive for their family and friends. How can they possibly get in their 56-game schedule? And what's going to happen this weekend? So the Leafs are supposed to go to Vancouver. I don't know if they're on, as we speak, I don't know if they're on their way. They're waiting for word. Is the game going to be postponed? Should we wait a day before we go? Are we going to play back-to-back Sunday, Monday? Are we even going to play Monday's game? What kind of team can the Canucks field? Anyway, that was going through the minds of some, like me, last night when the Leafs were losing 5-2 to the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets now within 3 points of Toronto atop the division. Auston Matthews didn't play. He's got a hand injury, but according to Coach Sheldon Keefe, it's not the same hand injury that was attached to the wrist injury that kept him out a while back. It seems every few weeks, they've got to give Auston Matthews some kind of load management thing. You know, aches and pains, whatever it is. He's so valuable to the mic. And I don't have a problem with that because I don't recall the last time the Leafs played a must-win game. Do you?
It was probably game 7 against the Bruins or something.
So a must-win game. So you need to have this guy ready for the playoffs because that's when it counts. Because what they do in the first 56 games means nothing. We know that. They've got to be ready for the playoffs. They've got to win that first-round matchup against whoever they're going to play. And then likely, it looks like, the Jets in the second round.
Oh, I forgot.
So you better get your act together. Jack Campbell, who was like unbeatable, couldn't stop a beach ball now. I mean, you knew this was going to happen. You knew 11 wins in a row that there had to be a spot there somewhere afterwards where he's going to lose 3 in a row or 4 out of 5 and give up some soft goals. And it's got to happen. And Jack Campbell was not the second coming of Georges Vezina or Tony Esposito or Ed Belfour or Johnny Bauer, name the great goalies. I mean, he's still a young guy. He's not even a real starter. He's never proven himself. So he allowed 3 goals on 6 shots, got the hook in the opening period in favor of David Riddick. Big save, Dave. Hey, welcome to Toronto. You get here, you play, you lose. Then you got to come in relief of Campbell. How's Freddie Anderson doing, by the way? Might he be ready for the playoffs? We might need him.
Right.
But the big difference with the Leafs is the power play. So much so, Mike, that I didn't even look up. I know they're 1-4. I don't know what the number is. It doesn't matter if they're 1-for-26 or 1-for-46 at this point. It doesn't matter. Up until the last few games, it didn't matter because they were winning games. But now when you go 0-for-4 with the man advantage, avec l'attaque massif, and your opponents go 2-for-3 on the power play, you got some problems. You can't kill penalties, and you can't score with the man advantage. That's a problem. And your goaltending is suspect now. That's a bit of a problem.
Right.
And now the Leafs are supposedly headed for Vancouver, and they're in jeopardy too because of the COVID situation with the Canucks. Don't think this isn't going to affect the Leafs. It is, because they're going to eventually have to play these two games in Vancouver unless the Canucks just can't finish. And the league, believe me, they're on an hour-to-hour basis trying to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to get the schedule in. They're not going to be able to get this happen. They just won't. Vancouver has missed too many games, and you can't force these guys into playing because player safety is of utmost importance. So their game tonight against Edmonton has already been postponed. And yesterday, a couple people on social media reported that Saturday's game, Leafs-Vancouver, hockey night in Canada, huge numbers, millions, that game might be postponed as well. And so when it was announced yesterday on social media by people like John Shannon, I believe I got it from, I'm like, okay, do I need to check sources or is this pretty good? And as of this moment, it hasn't officially by the NHL or the Canucks or Leafs been postponed. That Saturday night's Hockey Night in Canada game as of this moment is still on. I can't believe they're going to play it, but think of the money involved. Think of the numbers they're going to get on Rogers and CBC. Massive. Here come the Canucks, and I don't know who that is, but he looks a little wobbly on his skates. Well, he just came out of COVID protocol, so he's probably not 100%. Looks like he lost about 25 pounds there, but hey, let's play some hockey. It's Hockey Night in Canada.
Man.
Is that what we want?
Scary times, Hebsy. Scary times.
Pretty risky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's scary. And when you think of the stories you've heard about this new strain, this other strain, that's much more violent, the symptoms seem to be much more deadly than the other strain. You're like, whoa.
And the original.
How do you ask anyone to come back after that? You were just suffering from or had the symptoms of or had a case of, you know, COVID-19, how long before you're back to tip-top 100% shape as a professional high-performance athlete?
Yeah, without a doubt. And unlike this classic COVID that we talked about for the first bulk of this pandemic, this one seems to really affect the younger, fitter people. Like, I think a lot of the younger, fitter people, you know, they could get COVID, but they didn't get the bad symptoms. And it seems this variant seems to be different.
Right. So as of right now, the Canucks are in no shape to play. Their game tonight's been canceled. Their staff has basically said, the medical staff has said, you can't rush this. And even some of the players, JT Miller, one in particular, stepped out and said, you know, the league can't do this. They can't put profits in front of player safety.
Right.
Crazy. The Canucks have 19 games left to be played. Leafs and Winnipeg have 12 games left. Season ends in a month.
Wow.
Imagine being the Canucks and looking at the schedule and you're going, Jesus Christ, we just came off COVID. We got to play, 19 times in 28 days?
They're going to need David Ayers as a emergency goaltender, I think. By the way, I looked it up, Hebsy. I want to get the record straight. The last must-win game the Leafs played was Game 5 against Columbus in the play-in last year. That was the last must-win game.
Yeah, that's right. So the NHL's got a problem in that if the Canucks can't go, what do they do with the rest of their schedule? How do they have a playoffs? How do they award the Stanley Cup? How do they award individual awards if guys haven't played the same number of games at the end of the season? And how do you seed the teams? Do you go by winning percentage? It's the only really way you have to go. If Vancouver can't play 56 games and they can only play 50, do you take their winning percentage versus a team that played 56 games and theirs? That's the only way I think you can do it. But I think the NHL has to sort of make it up as they go along.
Right.
Like, what's the latest update? Can they play tomorrow? No? Okay, fine. Tell the Leafs that they can't, that shouldn't fly out to Vancouver, but they're going to have to make up those two games, you know, in April or May or whenever, and fly back out to Vancouver. That would be nuts. And if that's the case, that means that if the Leafs don't play two games in Vancouver, their schedule is even more compressed because they're going to have to play a couple of makeup games, three times in Winnipeg, go to Montreal, all in a very short period of time. It's not going to be fun.
Crazy.
And we're taking it minute by minute. And it might be good for someone like Austin Matthews. But at the same time, you know, him being able to rehab his wrist or hand problem and the rest of the team sitting around for 3 or 4 days, trying to stay in shape and then getting themselves ready with the help of the medical staff, the training staff, to play, you know, 5 games in 7 days. I mean, think about it, 5 games in 7 days. That's the way the NHL playoffs used to be. You play 4 games in 5 nights, right?
Right.
Quebec, Montreal was easy. You know, it's a short little trip. But imagine you were playing Vancouver, LA. 2 games in LA, fly to Vancouver, 2 games in Vancouver, all within 5 days. 1 day off to travel.
Right.
And then back and forth, back to LA, back to Vancouver, back to LA. Now try that in a regular schedule when you're getting ready for the playoffs. Forget about it. Be bagged. We're going to see horrible hockey in the playoffs. Guys are going to be wobbling around, you know, completely bagged from playing a regular season, a compressed regular schedule.
On a lighter note, Daniel on your YouTube page is just saying he loves your hat.
You like this LA Kings hat?
He's
my buddy Terry Rupert. He's got, he gave me some fantastic hats. I wore the California Golden Seals one a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I wore the Cleveland Barons one. A lot of people are Cleveland Barons. Don't remember that logo. Don't remember the color scheme. Don't remember who played on that team. Cleveland Barons.
Who? Like, can you remind me? Where did that franchise go? Did it move?
Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah, they merged.
Gotcha.
Those two teams.
Gotcha.
So Patrick Marleau, former Leaf, but mostly San Jose Shark, is 2 games away from breaking the all-time record for most games played in the National Hockey League.
Wow.
The record is held by Gordie Howe.
Wow.
1,767 games played. So think about this. In a couple of days, Patrick Marleau is going to tie and then eventually break Gordie Howe's record. The NHL, I would think, has a big ceremony, celebration planned. You know, under normal circumstances, I mean, Gordie Howe, who's passed away, would be there, or they would say, come on, Gordie, this guy's going to break your record. But in this case here, it's kind of hollow for two reasons.
Right.
One is Gordie Howe did set the record of NHL games played, but Gordie Howe, after he played all those games, went on, after retiring for 2 years, at the age of 42, to play another 419 professional games in the World Hockey Association, played till the age of 52.
Right.
Now, no one's going to say he would have played another 410 games or 19 games in the NHL. But let's face it, if he could play to the age of 52, and his last season was an NHL season, because the Hartford Whalers were in the National Hockey League then if we took, let's say, 200 of them, of the 419, and said, okay, Gordy could have played three more years, up to the age of 45, with the Detroit Red Wings, especially the Wings were a horrible team in those days. Let's just say another 200. So in my mind, Gordie Howe played 1,967 NHL games, the equivalent of, and I think that I'm even being hard on him there. I mean, you right. could probably say it would be 300 NHL games he could play, and maybe more,
right?
Especially in that watered down league. So I'm sorry, but Patrick Marleau, who never won anything, never scored 90 points in a season, wasn't an all-star caliber player, never finished higher than I think. He might've been third in the Lady Bing voting 1 year. Versus the great Gordie Howe, who won all those Hart trophies and set all those records and scored 801 goals. It's unfair to the legacy of Gordie Howe. And while it's admirable and I have nothing against Patrick Marleau, it's just, I can't put the two of them in the same sentence together. What do you think?
I think you're wrong on this one, Hebsy, because first of all, this is nothing to do with quality of player, but you are kind of understating Marleau as a player. Like you said, he's not all-star caliber. Sure, he was. This guy was a gold medal winner with Team Canada, right?
Forget gold medal with Team Canada. You and I could have played on that team and won a gold medal. Forget
He had to be selected. Like I think
he's an average. He's a better than average player.
Yes, but he's an all-star.
A long time.
But you know, you're looking
at him, which is great. But to compare him to Gordie Howe is unfair.
Well, yeah, but you're comparing him to Gordie Howe in only one category, which is NHL games played. It's totally fair. It's not even a subjective number. It's all like just a objective numeric value. Like he absolutely is comparable to Howe when it comes to NHL games played.
Right. When it comes to the number of games, NHL games played.
Right.
But like I'm telling you this, if Patrick Marleau retired tomorrow and then came back and played in the NHL, he'd have to win 6 consecutive Hart trophies.
Okay.
To be the equal of Gordie Howe.
Nobody,
not even the equal of Gordie Howe.
No.
I don't know. It just.
I know, but nobody is saying Marleau is as good a hockey player as Gordie Howe. But Marleau was a very good hockey player. He was way above average. I'd say he was a. How many all-star appearances did Marleau have? I'd say he had a bunch.
But do you think that the number of all-star appearances these days, especially, you know, equates to how great a player you were?
You're fighting nobody because there's no human on the planet other than maybe Marlowe's wife, who probably wouldn't even say that. But nobody says Marleau is as good a hockey player as Gordie Howe, who's one of the top five guys of all time.
He
was healthy.
More NHL games.
Yeah. And remind me, Gordie Howe, when did the NHL schedule go to 82 games? Do you have
After expansion.
Right. So how much of his career is pre-expansion, Gordie Howe?
All of it. Almost all of it. His last year, I think, was 70-71. So his last 4 years would have been post-expansion. So before that, he would have played 70-game seasons.
Right. So that alone.
And even less than that. Even back in the 40s when he played, I think it was even less than 70 games.
So that's more of a reason to put an asterisk next to this one.
Marleau.
Yeah, right.
Because he had opportunity to play in more seasons. Again, it's a phenomenal record.
Yeah.
And really, when you think about it, consistency, you know, the ability to go out there on a nightly basis and perform at a high level for that long a period of time should be applauded.
By the way,
it's just that he's up against Gordie Howe.
I know. Midtown Gordie.
Played till the age of 52. I remember Gordie Howe's last game was with the Hartford Whalers in the playoffs against the Montreal Canadiens. I interviewed him afterwards. His line mates were not in that game, but earlier in the series, his line mates were Davey Keon and Bobby Hull.
Wow. Wow.
Think about that. 1980.
Gord?
His centerman was a friend of mine, Bernie Johnston. He said, what's it like centering Howe and Hull?
Right.
And he's like, are you kidding me? They both want the puck. What am I supposed to do? My heroes.
There's only one puck.
On either side.
Midtown Gord chimes in on your YouTube page, and he just wants to put, he says that if there was no WHL, Gordie Howe would not have played another NHL game. So he doesn't think that carries a lot of weight.
Oh, he's wrong. He's totally wrong. If here's the thing. Had Gordy's sons, Mark and Marty, had there not been a WHA, they would have signed with an NHL team, maybe the Detroit Red Wings, and he right. would have come back and played for them.
Oh, and quick.
Trust me if I tell you, Mark Howe would have found another league to play in for sure, the NHL, which by then was, I'm thinking 21 teams then? No, maybe not 21.
But it was 21 for a long time because I grew up with 21.
The point of the matter is that Gordie Howe obviously proved that he could play at an extremely high level. And had he wanted to, he could have kept playing after the age of 42. But the Red Wings basically said, hey, Gordie, we'll make you a vice president and an ambassador to the team. And maybe now would be a good time because they didn't want to pay him $150,000 a year.
I hope Patrick Marleau never hears this segment of Hebsy on Sports because
he won't listen anyway. Again, Patrick Marleau, great guy.
Yeah.
Great player.
Sure.
But again, you know, you're right. Same number, but had Gordy chosen to, he could have played a lot more.
And games. do you think it's easy for a player to get named to the Team Canada Olympic team when the best is playing against the best? This is a huge accomplishment.
On. Stop it. Next, you're going to tell me Paul Henderson should be in the Hall of Fame.
I'm not saying that. But he was good enough to make the team. And I think Marleau was a great player.
An excellent player.
Yes.
A surefire Hall of Famer because of the years he played and the numbers and the points he put up. He's got 560 some odd goals.
And Joe Thornton, speaking of Maple Leafs, he's a Hall of Famer as well. And so you don't need to win the Stanley Cup because that's a big knock on Marleau and
By the
Thornton.
Way, trivia question.
Yeah, please.
Most games played in the National Hockey League without ever winning a Stanley Cup.
You're wearing the cap for him, I think. Who's the guy? I find my mind's blowing. You know, the French guy who played for the Kings.
Hey, Mike, yeah. This is right over your head. Who did we just talk about?
Oh, it's Marleau. It's Marleau.
Patrick Marleau.
I know. I got to pay more attention to you. Yeah.
That's okay. In baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays are looking for help. Anybody who thinks they can pitch, doesn't matter with which arm, who isn't experiencing pain in their throwing arm is asked to get in touch with the Blue Jays PDQ. Last night in KC, like they didn't even have a starting pitcher figured out. Okay, Anthony Kay, let's let him go. So they roll out Anthony Kay, who's not ready. He's not a major league pitcher. He's a sort of a hybrid AAA, maybe good enough in a pinch to pitch in the majors, which is what he was out there for yesterday.
Quadruple.
He was a couple of innings, try not to give up too many runs. Well, he gave up plenty. He got his butt kicked. 4 earned runs over 3 1/3. And then he handed it over to Tanner Roark, who's out of the rotation, who was victimized by an error. And he worked 2 2/3. And they're down 7-0 at one point. But I like this team. They're scrappy, young, scrappy players. These guys are not going to lie down. They're not going to say up 7 runs. That's too big a mountain to climb. They came back. They chipped away. And when Vladdy Guerrero hit a 750-foot bomb, I think it was a kilometer. I think he hit that one at a kilometer, and the exit velocity was like from Mad Max. Turbo boost, 116 miles per hour exit velocity. That made it 7-5. And the Jays were like, wait a minute. We could win this game.
Right.
But no. Cavan Biggio struggled to third. He made a couple of errors, the second of which went off his bare hand. He came out of the game after that, replaced by Joe Panik. They took x-rays on the hand. X-rays were negative. And the rally fell short. Although, you know, there are some encouraging signs from a hitting standpoint. But fielding, terrible. Defense, terrible. Base running, horrible. The night before, or the day before, Cavan Biggio hit a ball that Aaron Judge of the Yankees tried to make a shoestring catch on, and he missed. And the ball got by him and rolled all the way to the wall, and Cavan Biggio's thinking, I got triple. I might have an inside-the-park homer here, and he can run. And so he's running the bases, and when he gets past second base, he picks up his coach, Louis Rivera, who's waving his arms madly, go, 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 because Aaron Judge is picking up the ball, you know, deep in right field at the wall. And so here's Biggio. He can't see where the ball is. He doesn't know what's happened with Judge. He doesn't know if he's bobbled the ball. He's looking at his coach, and he's running full speed as the coach is waving his arms. And about 20 feet from third base, as he's motoring in there, Rivera holds up the stop sign. Well, if you're running full speed and you're just approaching the base, you can't just, you know, there's no automatic braking system in a human being. You've set it up so that you're going to round that bag and try for the inside the park home run because your coach has just waved you on.
Right.
So what happens is, as he's about to turn the bag, Rivera is holding up the stop sign. Cavan overruns the bag. Rivera doesn't realize that Judge has made a mistake and overthrown the cutoff man and thrown to third. He's essentially thrown behind the runner. He's not throwing to the cutoff man or throwing home to prevent the run from scoring. His throw went into third base. So what's Rivera do? He gets in Cavan's way, holds him up, tells him to go back to third. By then, Biggio's in no man's land, baby, and he's out. And I'm thinking, what's the purpose of a third base coach? Any base runner, once a base runner hits second base, if the ball's in center field or right center field or even in left center field, the runner is not looking over his shoulder or turning 90 degrees or 45 degrees to the right to see where the ball is. He's looking at his coach, and his coach is doing one of two things. He's either holding his hand up saying, stay there, or he's waving him. There's no in between. And so as the base runner is heading towards third base, he's still looking at the coach, and the coach is still waving his arms. So he's going, the ball must be bobbled out there. I've got a chance for an inside the park home run. This is when you turn on the afterburners. Your coach is giving you the green light. You're flying. And then he holds you up, not realizing that the throw came into third. So I blame Louis Rivera for this, because if he sees the throw has missed the cutoff man and is heading to third base, he just says to Biggio, keep going. And Biggio would have scored. It would have been an inside the park home run. So I was pissed with that.
Love your takes. Love your analysis.
All right. Jays and Royals go again tonight. Steven Matz on the hill for Toronto. I hope he throws a no-hitter, because anyone's capable of throwing a no-hitter these days, because there's I'll get to it in a second. Sure. There's so many strikeouts. So here's the injury list for the Blue Jays. Updated. George Springer still out with a quad problem, which he suffered while rehabbing his oblique problem. Which the Jays must be just scratching their head. How did we get such a fragile player? I mean, it's not like he got hit by a pitch. I know I've gone over this before, but he's still rehabbing the second of two injuries he suffered in spring training. Meanwhile, Jordan Romano, the closer, or one of them, on the IL with right ulnar neuritis. I don't know what that is. Well, I know what the ulnar nerve in the elbow is, but it sounds bad.
Right.
Julian Merriweather. The other guy, the guy who we've been waiting on for how many years after the Josh Donaldson deal, who's been on the IL back and forth with arm problems. He comes off. He's finally good this year. He looks like $1 million. He's throwing the ball 100 miles an hour. He's on the IL. Oh. Oblique strain.
Right.
Don't throw the ball so hard. Speaking of oblique strain, isn't that what Nate Pearson's coming back from?
A lot of obliques. I think
batting practice the other day.
And Vladdy had it.
Don't throw so hard.
Vladdy had an oblique thing last year, I think.
Right.
I remember.
But they said, don't throw so hard. They said, don't make such a violent move. This is Nate Pearson. This is your future here.
Right.
This is the man with the golden arm.
Right.
The hype job of all hype jobs. And you're telling him now not to be so violent in his delivery? You're going to change this guy's delivery?
Well, just to correct something there, I think Vladdy was the hype job of all hype jobs, and hopefully he's now living
up to
it.
No. Vladdy was a legit hype job.
But it was still the hype job. I've never, he was in the Hall of Fame before he played a game.
No, you're wrong. Vladdy Guerrero, from the time he was 15 years old, they all knew he was going to be a hitter. They just knew it. He just had that knack. The problem with Vladdy was he didn't have a position for him to play, and his mind was getting all screwed up with having to learn this when he really should have been advancing as a hitter. So it's taken a little bit, but you can tell now. That was a hype job. There was no way that Vladdy was not going to come through. Now, I'm not saying that, he's a flash in the pan. It's possible that a guy could go off to a great start and then pitchers could figure him out, but doesn't look like it with this guy.
No,
he's comfortable at first base.
Brian's already got him. He's a loyal listener of yours. He's got him in the Hall of Fame already, so we got to keep it going.
Well, if he keeps up what he's doing, this guy's hitting 430 or something like that. Man.
Move over Ted Williams.
Everything he hits hard. where was I on the
You're at Teoscar Hernandez. No, you're at Ross Stripling, I think.
Hang on. Ross Stripling on the IL. Flexor strain in his right forearm. Missed his start the other day. Teoscar Hernandez still under COVID protocol. Thomas Hatch has been out a month with elbow problems. I think there's others. I can't remember. The list just goes on and on of injuries. My God. And they're not. It's not like these injuries are occurring, in the battle, sliding hard into a base or diving for a line drive or something, you know, baseball related. This is all spring training related stuff. This is training stuff. This is injuries that occur in the batting cage or, you know, on the bullpen mound. What the hell's going on? I'm worried that this high performance training center they have in Dunedin is causing players to break down. It's almost like, hey, let's go over to the performance center and, you know, do some deadlifting. And then you wonder why the guy's arm is, oh, my ulnar nerve is killing me. Do you think it was the 700 pounds you were bench pressing?
But this isn't new. Like, I mean, athletes have been doing that forever, right?
But baseball players, come on.
I think it's, I think they're just more cautious with injuries like that. I think back in the day, they just ran through their oblique strains. Like, don't you think it's just they played themselves through it, you know?
Alarming frequency, Mike. Alarming.
Okay. Do you think it's an overly cautious approach to these types of injuries? That's a more modern thought as opposed to in the 80s when literally you played through your oblique strain?
I don't know if you played through an oblique strain the same way, but I think that, you know, if you look back, the pitchers, no pitcher wants to say, look, my arm hurts, doesn't want to lose right. his job. Nowadays, guys have got more guaranteed contracts or whatever. I guess they're more likely to look at their arm as an investment for the rest of their lives as opposed to, you know, the what's going on right then and there. Because most guys are going to say, look, put me in there. Nobody wants to come out of a game. Nobody wants to go on the injured list.
Put me in, coach. Yeah, I know the song for sure.
Got it.
Okay, and I just want to clarify something. When I talk about Vladdy, it's the greatest hype of my lifetime. I'm not suggesting he's not worthy of the hype or that he's a real deal. I'm saying that right now. I believe he's a real deal. But you can be hyped and still live up to expectations. Like, I've never seen anything like the Vladdy hype train.
But the fact that it's lived up to its expectation, or it seems to be.
Sure.
Do you look back on it now and say, oh, I guess it was legit.
Yeah. No doubt. Real. No doubt. It makes more sense as this career evolves. But still that I really did feel like we had him in the Hall of Fame before he faced a major league pitch.
But Mike, this is the way we are today. Sure. Look at the other day when, who is it? Bo Bichette. No one in the history of baseball other than Joe DiMaggio in his first 87 games. So I thought, had anyone prior to this year ever considered 87 games as any kind of a benchmark?
No.
So once this happens, it just opens up the floodgates. Look at how so-and-so is doing in his first 7 games. No one over his first 7 games. And so it's really easy for the stats heads to just pull out something and say, all right, first 87 games, no one's done this first 88 games. The research is available. Everything's available now. It's not hard for someone to go and find out right. how someone did in an arbitrary number. I liked it when it was 50, 100, 100, nice round numbers.
I'm with you, Hebsy. I'm with you. I'm shaking my fist at those damn computers in the cloud. Absolutely.
Do you think Joe DiMaggio, do you think at any point someone said, hey, Joe, do you know that that Babe Ruth in his first 87 games only had this many extra base hits and you've got this many extra base hits? And Joe DiMaggio would say, 87 games? What the hell is that?
Now I'm
thinking 154 games. What do you think? 87 games.
Now I've got Mrs. Robinson in my head.
Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?
Right. Love it.
Meanwhile, the early season has already seen a no-hitter. Carlos Rodon of the White Sox threw one the other night. And the guy who reached base to break the perfect game initially, like, he didn't even try to get out of the way of the sinker. He let it hit his foot. I don't even think it hit his foot. And then he did this Neymar type of, oh, I'm hurt. And he's hobbling around. You know, just to sell the fact that he got hit by a pitch, which was kind of like, you know, people wanted to see a no-hitter. Or so we thought, Mike. We think people want to see a no-hitter, right?
For your team, yes, I think. Yeah.
But I don't know. Nope. I mean, if you said to me, we're going to see a no-hitter tonight, he's going to walk 4 and he's going to throw a couple wild pitches and it's going to take 3 hours. He's going to strike out 14 guys.
Is it a complete game no-hitter? Because I feel,
Yeah, no-hitter's got to be a complete game. Yeah,
okay, because there's been, last year, I can't remember, we've had...
Combined no-hitters. Not the same.
I got to say, I still get very excited. In fact, one of the things I want, and I got within one pitch once in the late 90s, but I want to be at a game where my home team pitches a no-hitter. Like, this is like a dream of mine, and I haven't witnessed this yet. And I mean, no. I guess I should say, no Blue Jay fan has unless they went to Cleveland that day.
Yeah.
But I think it's exciting to pitch a complete game no-hitter, even though it's probably lost a little value here. It's still damn exciting, right? And it's still pretty rare, right?
I'm going to talk about it in a second, how we may end up seeing more no-hitters. which could or couldn't be good.
Okay.
They're intertwined. So Rodon's got a no-hitter for the White Sox. I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of no-hit games this year and low-hit games. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to say there's going to be five no-hitters thrown this year, and there's going to be a dozen one-hitters.
Okay.
Right? You could walk four or five guys. It's the number of hits you give up. It's a nice
sure.
number. Well, let me tell you the story in softball of a lady by the name of Hope Troutwine at the University of North Texas, who threw a perfect game in softball, NCAA, Division I, seven inning, no-no. But Mike, not only did she throw a no-hitter, mm-hmm. all 21 outs were strikeouts.
Wow. Wow.
That's a perfect.
Wow.
Got it? Every out is a strikeout.
Were there any balls? I was going to say, can you do, what's 21 times
There were no
three?
Foul yes. balls hit.
Wow.
There were no, you know, they're just... Her fielders said, you know, we just stood there for seven innings.
Right.
They didn't even chase a foul pop-up.
Wow. Wow.
It had never happened before. It may never happen again. It's an amazing record, Mike. It's fantastic. Right. And all the credit in the world to Hope Troutwine. But wow. imagine if this happened on a more regular basis.
Wow.
Is it baseball? Or is it just an overpowering pitcher who just nobody can touch?
But aren't they?
Every single one of the outs is a strikeout that every defensive player stood there and did nothing.
Where are they moving the mound back? Like, can
hang
you
on,
know?
I'm going to get to
oh,
it.
Oh, I apologize. Okay, sorry.
Hebzius interruptus that you are. So while Hope is mowing them down, her teammates did nothing. There's zero defensive plays. Everybody stood around and watched, and it was great. This has been happening a lot in Major League Baseball, too, and it's reached a crisis point. The Independent Atlantic League, working in conjunction with Major League Baseball, will experiment with two new rules this year designed to cut down on the number of strikeouts and put more balls in play. The first half of their season will be normal, but in August, second half of the season, they're going to switch to a double hook rule, and they're going to move the pitching rubber back to 61 feet, 6 inches. Here's the double hook rule. Mike, ready?
I'm ready.
Starting pitchers are very important to baseball. Fans want to know the pitching matchup. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear that this guy's going to be an opener, Wilmer Font for one inning. Starting pitching is big because people used to go to the ballpark saying, what's the pitching matchup? Who we got? Ryu is going?
Yeah.
Who's he got?
Right.
Corey Kluber? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it takes on little importance. And there's a lot more strikeouts because there's a lot more relief pitchers coming in throwing 150 miles an hour. So as long as the starting pitcher stays in the game, so too will the designated hitter spot in the batting order in this new double hook rule that they're going to try in the Atlantic League.
Ooh.
But once the starting pitcher is pulled, the DH spot becomes the pitcher spot in the batting order.
Oh, wow.
This way, there's some managerial strategy involved, and you got to have pinch hitters on your bench. You can't have an 8-man bullpen. You need another guy on your bench, another position player, which teams rarely use now, Mike. They don't. How many pinch hitters? Think about it. How many times did your Blue Jays pinch hit last year?
Right.
Not many.
No idea.
Not many at all. Pinch hitter has become, you know, a dinosaur, a dodo bird.
Right.
So I like this idea that they're trying to see if the starting pitcher can now become an important part of baseball, that you're rewarded if your starting pitcher stays in longer with the DH. Kind of a hybrid, you know, universal DH rule. What do you think?
My initial reaction to that is that's so smart. Like, I really, really like it. But then I recall, of course, that Major League has sort of done away with the pitcher hitting. Like, it's all about the DH. So I can't imagine they'd bring back pitchers hitting, and you have to bring back pitchers hitting for that rule to work. But the spirit of that rule, I love.
No, you don't. You could choose to have the pitcher hitting once the starting pitcher has been pulled from the game. As long as the starter stays in, he doesn't have to hit.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. But
but what you also do is, especially if you're going to have the three batter rule for relief pitchers and such, is now a manager goes, all right, coming up next inning, I've got the DH spot. If I pull my pitcher now,
yeah,
I can't use the DH there.
Right.
The only way I can use the DH there is if I substitute a defensive player. In other words, I move my DH to a different defensive spot, and then the player he replaces yeah. that becomes the pitcher's spot in the batting order. So there's a lot more kind of National League strategy sure. there, which I like.
I like I said initially when you said it's like a light went off, and I'm like, oh god, that's so smart. Like I really like that. Yes.
Right. So they did a massive study. The Major League Baseball has spent a lot of money doing studies to determine what fans want. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of baseball do you want to see? What type of, what's your favorite version of baseball? Is it strikeouts, home runs? Is it stolen bases? Is it small ball? Is it great defense? You know, what do you want to see? Do you want contact or do you want strikeouts? And here's the problem. Like 25% of all outs today are via the strikeout. A decade ago, it was 15%, which was manageable. So it means baseball becomes an even slower, longer game with fewer defensive plays made and a lot of standing around. I mean, that means a lot of sitting around if you're a fan. You're sitting, you're watching guys strike out.
Right.
Ball's not put in play. Defense, no reason to have a defender there. It's all pitcher versus hitter. And after a while, it gets to be boring. Fans like action. That means putting the ball in play. A strikeout to a baseball fan, that's like a slam dunk to a basketball fan. Happens all the time. So to give the hitter an extra 1/100th of a second, they're going to have the pitchers throw from 61 feet, 6 inches, 1 foot further back, the pitching rubber. That's the first time since 1893 that the distance from the pitcher's rubber to the plate has been changed. And it's going to allow the hitter an extra 1/100th of a second to put the ball in play. It's going to make a 93.6 mile an hour fastball into about a 91.8 mile an hour fastball once it reaches the plate. What do you think?
I think it's probably worth experimenting with, because I think there are way too many strikeouts in this game. And I really do think it is makes it kind of boring. Like I don't want to sound like the old guy, but we are older guys. But I miss I just miss the old baseball. It just feels, you know what, Hebsy, when I look back at when did I like sort of my first disappointment with the game was when the shift entered the game. Okay. The defensive shift. Like, right. I remember, I think it was Carlos Delgado or something, but like the way that they would position themselves, like the same hit that would have been like a single was suddenly like straight to the fielder and an easy out. Like, and I know that defensive shifts are allowed, of course, but that really was sort of one of the changes. I wish that the defensive shift was somehow legislated against, if that's possible.
Well, you could blame Ted Williams for that, because back in the day, Ted Williams was such a feared pull hitter that Cleveland manager Lou Boudreau in the 40s had his infield shift around. They all played to the right side of second base.
Right.
Because Williams just hit bullets into right field and right center
field. So it goes back that long, eh? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And what happened was Williams was so stubborn and believed he was such a great hitter that even with the defensive shift on, even with like four guys standing in right field, you know, or right, short right field, he could still hit a ball that, you know, that would get in for a hit. He would not go the other way. He wouldn't drop a bunt down. It was an ego thing.
Sure.
And so after a while, manager said, you know, for this particular hitter, if he's a pull hitter, let's shade him this way. Right. Now, again, shade him. You know, the radio announcer would say to you, you know, Alomar shading, you know, Ripken more towards second base, shading him up the middle. You'd go, oh, okay. So he thinks that Cal is a pull hitter. And even if he doesn't pull the ball, the worst he's going to do is hit it up the middle. So the second baseman shades him. He doesn't shade him towards the first base side because he knows that Ripken doesn't hit the ball there. And after a while, you just get a book on certain hitters. And now you've got managers, you know, like the Joe Maddens and many of them now, who basically say, look, the numbers we've got on this guy say that most of his hits go here.
Right.
So let's play him there.
Sure.
You know, pitch him away, play him away.
Right. Hey, I know we're going to move into basketball. So at the end of the basketball segment, I have a good question from Gene Valaitis, who's watching on the YouTube channel. Hello to Gene. But Gene, while we're in the baseball section, I want to get his name right. Daniel Finkler wants to know if you're going to shout out Yadler Molina for catching 2,000 games with the same team.
I was going to. Yadier, that's a tremendous feat. We talk about 1,000 games in hockey, for example, which is a little over 12 years of playing in the NHL, which is a milestone. You know, Milan Lucic reached it the other night, but 260-some-odd NHL players have reached that. So it's great. It's a nice number, but it's not like you know, it's the top of the absolute top of the mountain, because it's been done so many times. So, you know, applause, But Yadier Molina to catch 2,000 games with the same team.
Right.
And it's catching. It's not, you know, to how many times did that guy have to get into a crouch? Yeah. His knees must be shot.
Right.
He plays at a high level. So it's a tremendous achievement. So thanks, Daniel, for asking that question. I was going to mention it. Shout out to Yadier Molina. Basketball. The Raptors host their cross-state rivals, the Orlando Magic, tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
the Tampa right. Raptors. If you're wondering which Raptors team is going to show up tonight, you're not the only one. I have no idea. I don't know what Nick Nurse is thinking. I don't know what the players are thinking. They're one game back of Chicago for 10th place in the East, which would be a play-in spot to get into the playoff round. That would give them a chance.
Right.
But Nick Nurse is resting his big guns. Lowry still bothered by a toe injury. Gary Trent Jr. has ankle issues. D'Andre Bembry has right hamstring soreness. Fred VanVleet is a puddle of sweat. He's bagged. He probably is suffering, some type of symptoms. And we don't know if it's COVID or whatever. Or he's just run down. He needs rest.
Right.
Will the Raptors give it their all, Mike? Will they make a run for the playoffs, or are they prepared to fold their tents on the season and hope that next year allows them to have a real home and an opportunity for a high draft pick and perhaps they can be a force in the NBA East?
It's interesting, this debate. I see the first comment on the YouTube page is Brian saying that the Raptors are trying to tank, but they can't pull it off. And it sort of does seem that way. Like, they're trying to tank.
I can't believe that the whole team is saying, let's not win.
No, I can't believe that. Right, exactly. And
I can't believe that every player, when he gets the ball, is like, I missed that shot.
Oh, yeah. And that's never how tanks work, right? Like, I know. But it's always putting a team on the court that will not win. Here's what bothers me the most. Right.
If I'm betting and I see that the Raptors are tanking and I look at the point spread and I'm not a big gambler that way, so I don't know.
Right.
But I might tend to put some money on a team. And if you happen to know someone on the Raptors and you know they're tanking, let's say you think you've got a little inside info.
Right.
Might you not wager against them?
Oh, sure, but I don't believe these professional athletes are
going to... But, when you say tanking, yeah, that means they're not trying to win. They're not being competitive. And any better
right.
could see that and take advantage of it.
Sure.
Would you take their games off the board, saying, well, we can't have a Raptors game. They're tanking.
Yeah, great point. I never...
What if we made the spread 15 points or 25 points or whatever it is? What if the money line was, you want to bet the Raptors, you got to lay out... People are going to look. They don't want to win. They're out of it. But you could say the same thing about a team that's out of it, any team in any sport.
Sure.
If they're out of it and they have no chance of making the playoffs, to what degree are they trying?
Right.
Are they still trying 100%? Or are they, putting in the time and making it look good? I don't know, man. I'd hate to accuse anybody of tanking, a team, an individual player.
Right. Right. Now, before I get to Gene's question that's basketball related, people are looking for your take, Hebsy. So, what do you wish the Raptors would do? Do you want them to make a run and, see what they can do in the playoffs, if they can play in and make some noise? Or fold their tents and try to get a draft pick and worry about when they can actually play at the Scotiabank Arena again and do it again next year? Like, what are you hoping, or what do you think the Raptors should do here?
I think this is a team that's lost in a lot of ways, and most of it has to do with the fact that they're not at home, that they're gypsies. I can't speak for the guys, but I got to believe it's like, hey, we're going home to Tampa. What are they? They're living in rented homes there, families. They can't touch their fans. They can't experience what it's like to have their fans in the stands while every other team they're playing has some fans in the stands. And they may just say, this is a write-off. This season's a whole write-off. We never had a home. We never had a fan base. We never were healthy. Maybe they just want to pack it in and start fresh next year, hopefully in Toronto. But I would like to see them make a run. I think if they're healthy, they are a good team. And they could scare some teams. I'm imagining this team at full strength.
Right.
And I think they're a heck of a team. I don't think the East is that great. Certainly not that this team couldn't make the playoffs and make a run. They've been there before.
Right. Right. Okay, before we leave basketball here, Gene Velitis, he's from the Jesse and Gene Show.
Hello. I know who Gene Velitis is. I worked on the Jesse and Gene Show.
I'm telling the listeners, not you.
Oh,
I'm well aware you know who Gene Velaitis is. hope you're feeling better, Gene. He says Michael Jordan will get in. Michael Jordan will induct Kobe Bryant into the Basketball Hall of Fame next month.
Yes, he will.
Hebsy, do you agree it should be Michael Jordan or should it be Shaq? He says, and he says, good morning from beautiful British Columbia. Because, I mean, unlike Michael Jordan, Shaq actually won championships with Kobe Bryant. But go ahead.
Well, you know, that's a tough one. I don't know if the family had asked Michael Jordan. I don't know if Michael had asked, may I? I would love to. And Michael and Kobe were much closer than Shaq and Kobe, even though Shaq and Kobe were teammates.
Right, right.
Shaq and Kobe didn't get along a lot. And so to choose someone to induct a person that's passed away into the Hall of Fame is a very much more personal, poignant moment, I think. Especially the way Kobe passed at such a young age.
Right.
And I would like to hear Michael Jordan. You know, I really enjoyed the documentary. I always found Michael Jordan to be when he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And there weren't too many opportunities because he was always just surrounded by cameras and microphones. Very articulate, very thoughtful in speaking, and spoke his mind. You know, he didn't hold anything back. So I think I'd like to hear Michael Jordan at his best describing, you know, his little brother, Kobe.
Good points.
In inducting him to the Hall of Fame. Okay, golf. The courses in Ontario are open, and that includes my favorite track, Crosswinds in Burlington. You know all about that. Crosswindsgolf.com, the place to go for your tee time. If you're like me, you are dying to get out there. And you're also following the Canadian golfers this year, especially Corey Connors from Listowel, Ontario. Had a top 10 finish at the Masters. I thought he might have won for a while there. And he ran into some problems. He ran into about a four-hole stretch there where he had problems and he shot two over. But still, top 10 at the Masters and a beautiful, sweet, silky swing that everybody loves. He is in the hunt of the RBC Heritage Classic, firing a 400 par 67 yesterday, same as Mackenzie Hughes of Dundas, Ontario, 67s. Cameron Smith was the first round leader after a sizzling 9 under 62. On the distaff side, Brooke Henderson tied for 16th after two rounds of the Lotte Championship in Hawaii. She's at 8 under par. Yuka Sasso of the Philippines, the leader, 16 under par. Get out there and play some golf. It's beautiful. It's the best sport in these COVID times. How about a little sports media talk? Mike, are you up for that?
Yes, please. Love it.
According to one source, the Fan Radio has interviewed several people for the vacant program director's job, and one of the favorites is none other than Greg Brady.
Whoa.
Two-time morning show host there and currently at AM 640 in Toronto. Now, Jonah from Toronto Sports Media, who lives in Seattle, by the way, but is very up on Toronto media, which it's easy to do. Anywhere in the world, you don't have to, like back in the day, you had to be in Toronto to hear the radio stations and watch the TV station. Not anymore.
Right.
So Jonah has solid sources at Rogers that suggest that Brady has is on the short list or has been interviewed or there's interest or all of the above. And so this has got to have some credibility. This guy knows his stuff. I spoke to Brady about it. He would only tell me, yes, he has spoken to Greg Sansone of Rogers in the Fan, but he won't tell me anymore.
I got a question because I know you're friends with Greg. Is this I can't tell you any more that you can say on your podcast, or did he really not tell you anymore?
Well, he didn't tell me anymore.
Okay.
He, you know, again, I think a lot of people have speculated that, oh boy, what is this a plum job, Mike, do you think?
I always
whoever
felt
gets
that was
the
a cool
gig
job.
As program director.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, will they not be under the gun immediately to put a bunch of people on the air that are listenable and,
but this is the time,
you know, there's some,
like,
I don't know, some hype, something to, hey, Toronto, have we got radio for you?
Right.
Come listen to so-and-so, come listen to so-and-so, hear what we've got planned for you on the Fan as we take on TSN 1050 and Overdrive, take on their morning show and battle tooth and nail for the ears of the sports listening public.
But Hebsy, man, considering how ratings are hurting so badly at the Fan 590 and at 1050, although Overdrive has some success in the key demos, but basically they're a shadow of their former selves in terms of ears that are tuning in to listen. This is the time to get the to take over, because really there's nowhere to go but up. Like I mean, maybe there's a new bottom they can discover, but I understand that there's virtually like nobody's listening to Fan 590 these days. So this is a cool opportunity, I think, to come in and make a little noise and try to restore some of that former glory. What do you think? Like, it's a good time to do that. I think it would be good for Brady.
I don't know if anybody would want that job.
Well, why is Brady talking to Sansoni then?
I think it's a no-win. Unless you've got a big budget and unless you've got total autonomy, which at Rogers, I don't think you're going to get. I mean, I don't think Dave Cadeau had total autonomy.
Right.
So I don't know, man. I mean, that would have to be a sweetheart of a deal to become the program director, look at that station and go, all right, who stays, who goes? What do we do about our afternoon drive? By the way, the Fans Drive Home show, which is basically a Tim and Fred's Friends simulcast, is drawing about 3,000 listeners, 25 to 54.
Wow.
3,000.
And how many people live in the GTA?
Yeah. Overdrive, which is my favorite show, is drawing about 5,000.
So that's all it takes, eh?
25 to 54 over the same time period. Now, those are the radio numbers. Both shows, if I'm not mistaken, do have podcasts. But they don't monetize those podcasts. They just sort of, you know, okay, the first hour is over on radio. Let's make it available on a podcast.
Interesting.
And that's the way I like to listen. I mean, sometimes I'll listen to it live if I'm around. But if not, I'm like, oh, geez, it's 8 o'clock at night. I wonder what they were saying on Overdrive. I'll just listen to one of the hours or as much as I can of it on the podcast.
These numbers astound me as a podcaster who sees like download stats and analytics for podcasts that are here in the TMDS family. It really tells me that the opportunity to, and this sounds like a sales pitch, but the opportunity to sponsor a show like Hebsy on Sports, like Crosswinds is on board. But it, to me, that's the best bang for the buck, because if only 3,000 people are listening to Tim and Friends on 590, well, that's nothing compared to these downloads.
At that time.
Right. Okay.
At that time. That's so, the only, now again, we don't know what kind, I don't know. Tim and Friends might have Boffo podcast numbers. I don't think so, because that is.
So they don't put ads in the podcast? Like they don't run like a Tim Hortons ad or something in the podcast? No.
I don't know. I don't think radio stations have any idea how to monetize
a podcast. So strange.
They've never thought about it. They're not thinking that way. They're thinking radio. And let's face it, to have 5,000 people listening to you at a particular time, that's appointment listening. That's you're in your car. You're stuck or whatever it is, you're in traffic, you've got the radio on. Life's not like that anymore. You don't look at the clock and go, oh my God. You might look at the clock and see, geez, the Jays game is coming on because that's live sports. But anything else, Mike?
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, it's 6 o'clock. I got to get home for the news. Oh my God, it's 5 o'clock. I got to listen to Bobcat on the Fan.
Only live sports. That's the only thing in my life.
Live news and live sports.
Live news. Well, yeah, sure. Even news, though.
Anything else,
do a lot of that on demand.
You can listen to and watch whenever you want. And that's why, Mike, this show that you're listening to now,
Hebsy on Sports,
which can be downloaded on demand, is drawing about 3,000 listeners on average over several days, right? It's not 3,000 people as we're doing this live. But right. Over a couple of days, whether you
Hebsy, you
listened or watched this show live now, downloaded it and listened to it at your leisure tomorrow, the day after that, after a few days, we're at 3,000. But after a couple months, we're at 3,500. You can't say that about a live audience. You either get it live or you miss it.
Right.
And I'm sure you've looked at your numbers as well. So I'm looking saying, well, you know, we have as many listeners, not at the same time, but having heard the program, doesn't have to be as they say it. We have the same number of people who have listened to this podcast that heard one of those radio shows live.
Wild. And you know, wild. Now, by the way, I talk about, you know, appointment listening, and Gene Velez just wants to say when he sees it's 6:20 a.m. his time on a Friday, he's got an appointment to tune into Hebsy on Sports to hear some Mark Hebsher. So I think that's really cool. I just want to say that's cool.
It is very cool. But you know what? And I know that Gene hasn't, he has also caught the show, maybe not live. Maybe sure. Caught some of it live and he had something to do. And then later in the day, he's like, you know, I'm going to go to YouTube and catch the last 20 minutes of it. Or I'm going to listen to the podcast while I'm out for my walk.
Right.
The last 20 minutes or 30 minutes of it, which you can't do if it's radio. You know, people aren't listening to the entire show of Overdrive. They're not listening to the whole 3 hours, I don't think, live. No. If they were stuck in their car, they might. And, but they might listen to an hour of it live and then catch another hour or so of it on the podcast later on when they're taking the dog for the walk.
Absolutely. And think of all the people that were stuck in their cars in 2019 that actually are working from home now. Like one just came down the stairs to grab my coffee mug here, and she was, you know, commuting downtown every day, 5 days a week. Oh, every day, 5 days a week, and hasn't done so since March 2020. So there's a lot of people in that bucket. So
there are. And as you know, Mike, because you've got a very successful podcast as well, it takes time. For some people, it takes longer. But as time goes on and there are fewer opportunities for you to catch a live show or hear something or watch something that you really enjoy, you don't have to see it live.
Right.
You can binge listen, binge watch. I'm amazed myself when I see, like today, for example, this morning, people were still downloading last episode, 227.
Right.
Which, by the way, was a damn good episode.
Yes.
But there's people that were downloading episode 221.
Oh.
And so I'm wondering, in a lot of ways, like, well, why are they doing that?
Right.
They must have listened to another show and said, oh, I wonder what else he's got. And you just can't do that with live radio. You can't say, oh,
right,
I'm going to go back and listen in the archives to Overdrive's show from 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Oh, and by the way,
yeah,
did I not say Nick Foligno should be a Maple Leaf
how long ago? Yeah, you did. Yes, you did. You did. And he's now a Maple Leaf.
I don't want to blow my horn up.
Yeah, before you do your own horn. Before you close out, though, you talked about the fact that our friend of the show, Greg Brady, did have at least he admits he had a conversation with Greg Sansone about the open, the vacancy, the program director vacancy at the Fan 590. And of course, your fans are wondering.
I don't know if the discussion was about the program director job.
Okay, just they have spoken.
Here's the thing, Mike. They've spoken.
Okay.
But I think you have to see what's going on in radio in the rest of the country and what happened in Vancouver. When TSN 1040 shuttered and Sportsnet 650 made some changes, Andrew Walker gone, their morning team out, replaced by the morning show that was on 1040. And the program director at 650, a guy named Craig McEwen, also has his own show. So to think that whoever gets the program director's job at the Fan might also have to take on an on-air shift, you know, save money.
Sure.
That would be awfully difficult. That's a tough, especially if you're the morning man. So perhaps the discussion was, hey, Greg, you know, what would you think about doing a shift and being the program director? And I mean, that would just be a disaster.
Third time's the charm. Imagine that.
No, but you couldn't do both.
Okay.
You can't be a good radio announcer and have a good show if you're also worrying about programming decisions the rest of the day.
It's like when Pete Rose was managing the Reds. Okay, so...
No. It's not like that at all. Okay. Not at all.
Just that I throw a sports analogy in there. But
that's not the one.
Okay, but what about
you? I'll tell you what it's like. I'll tell you what it's like, Mike.
Yeah.
It's like being the coach and general manager.
Right.
In the midst of a game, you're thinking, who do I put on the next shift? But in the back of your mind, you're going, I got to trade for somebody. I wonder if so-and-so is available on waivers.
Right. And Pat Quinn might be the last guy who did both.
I think so.
But the question, though, from your fans, and there are many of them, is what about you? Like, would you have a conversation with Greg Sansone about this vacancy as a program director at the Fan?
Never. I want to have an enjoyable life. I don't want to think of having to sit in a room with someone saying, look, you're gone.
Right.
Or interview people and say, what makes you think you're going to be great on the air here? Or go through any of that stuff. Because if I'm under the corporate, structure of Rogers, I know from experience that somewhere along the line, something's going to happen where it's like, can't do that. Or nope, we got word from corporate. Can't do that. Or have to do this. Got to take this sponsor on. Got to do that.
Right.
I don't want to go through that at all. I just think, you'd have to have complete free reign. You'd have to have autonomy to be able to make the decisions you wanted to. I want to hire Bob McCowan back. What do you think about that? First thing I would do, bring back McCowan. Oh, we can't do that. Oh, then I don't want the job. Because I got to have the best people on the air. The best. And if it's going to cost me, fine. If I can get McCowan for the same money as before, and you think it was too much, and that's the only way I can get him, I got to get him.
Yeah, you're not going to get that at a Rogers station. Now, is there any possibility at all, before we play us off, any possibility of a Brady and Walker reunion? Have you heard anything on that when you talk to your friend Greg Brady?
No, I don't think so.
Are the chances slim to none? Okay, the ship has sailed.
The train don't stop here anymore.
Okay. Okay, but Brady himself has had a couple of runs at 590, and apparently that ship is still in the harbor. You know what I mean?
Like, well, that's because Brady was with Brady. They came in and said, look, we're hiring Dean Blundell to do the mornings. And he said, what?
And they paid Brady to sit at home, basically.
Well, like, they moved him to the mid-afternoon thing.
Right,
and
after
then,
that.
Yeah, and then him and Walker were mid-afternoon. Then they went to mornings, then right. Blundell. And then Blundell wanted Walker on his show. And Walker was like, right. I don't want to work with Blundell.
Anything but that. That's anything but that. That's just no money is worth that.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, if you're going to run a radio station, you kind of got to have everyone on board together. I'm not saying that your morning man has to love your afternoon man, but I always thought that it was a good idea. And I think McCowan used to do this, and I forget, was it with Derringer and Marsden? It might have been, where he'd come on in the morning and say, yeah, we got this coming up later. Or he'd just, you know, this is my opinion on that.
Right.
I loved it.
But I always,
and it was
I
good
always
cross promotion for the station, you know. And by the way, folks, when you're driving home, tune in to Bob McCowan.
But I always think back to like WNBC, and you got Imus and Stern at the station, and they hated each other.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's okay.
I think you'll find there is a lot of professional jealousy in broadcasting. A lot of it. Someone sees someone else's gig and goes, "Why can't I have that gig? That person's not that good."
Lots of that.
A lot of that. And I'll bet, and it's not just in broadcasting. You're not telling me that there are some doctors out there who go, how did that guy become a doctor? He's a terrible doctor.
Right.
They would never say, I mean, you know, professional courtesy, but deep down you're going, how does he get a practice like that? And how, you know, it's envy or jealousy or both. But in a lot of ways, you look at another person and you go, how did they get that opportunity? And you surmise that they're making a certain amount of money. They've got certain perks, and it makes you even more angry. Why them? Why not me? It's tough for someone to admit that they just weren't there at the right time, didn't take advantage of their opportunity. Something about them is wrong.
Right.
Their look, their background, their beliefs, right? All these factors.
Hey, we'll close with what Gene thinks they should do with the Fan 590. And you can pass this on to Greg Brady for when he becomes program director. But this is what I know. Gene suggests that they make it a 24-hour-a-day traffic report station. He says it costs nothing and people listen. So let's hope Gene gets the PD job at the Fan 590, it's going to be all traffic all the time. So
if you could find a way to weave sports talk into traffic, right. If you could have a guy on the road saying, yeah, I'm on the Don Valley Parkway, I'm totally stuck. While I'm here, let's talk about the Jays. And then as he's talking about the Jays, he goes, oh, hang on a second, right lane closed at Bloor. Then you kill two birds with one stone. That's it. Episode 228 of Hebsy on Sports in the book. Thanks to our sponsor, Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in Burlington. Great to have them back. I can hardly wait to get out there for a round. Oh, my God. Overlooking the beautiful Niagara Escarpment, Mount Nemo over there, Rattlesnake Point over there, breathing in the fresh air, socially distanced. Golf is great. Check out crosswindsgolf.com. Book your tee time now for a spectacular day of golf. Thanks to Toronto Mike, as always, for production and inspiration. Check out his excellent podcast at torontomike.com. I got a lot of catching up to do. I think when I paint the house, I'll be listening to past podcasts.
There's some good episodes there waiting for you, Hebsy.
813, 821, 794. Boy, there's so many good Toronto Mike podcasts. Thanks for allowing us into your headspace, everybody. Back with another episode of Hebsy on Sports next week. Until then, so long for now. This podcast has been produced by TMDS and accelerated by Rome Phone. Rome Phone brings you the most reliable virtual phone service to run your business and protect your home number from unwanted calls. Visit romephone.ca to get started.